This is Inside Wealth, the ultimate disclosure on Talk 910 KNEW. Living a healthy and happy life is about awakening to matters of your wallet, balanced by concerns of your heart. Now, Stu Zimmerman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Inside Wealth. We're talking about the kind of wealth that money alone just can't buy. And we all know these days that money may be a little harder to come by, especially if you're looking at your portfolios, your 401k plans, and we know on a profound level, it ain't no joke, okay? Because we know that there is significant financial risk right now, and many of us feel a lot less wealthy today than we may have felt 3 months ago or 6 months ago, just by looking at those account statements that come in. Dare I say, being in this lovely season, known as spring to some people, and tax season to others. So as we're looking at our to-do list with our property taxes and income taxes and everything else, it's very easy to feel insecure about our finances right now, even if we are blessed with a number of zeros in our account, with any number in front of it. Even if, dare I say, you're a millionaire, you may still feel less certain about your financial prospects today than you did 3 or 6 months ago or a year ago. Now, we're going to take a look at how we can create businesses and look at our finances in ways that bring out the best of who we are as human beings. Because at the end of the day and the beginning of the day, for that matter, you know, our finances are going to fluctuate. But who we are in the inside and bringing that out into the world every day, the best of who we are, that is something that nobody can take from us. We've got a shining example of it today with Mike Hannigan, who's actually here in studio as the co-founder of Give Something Back. It's a business company. It's a for-profit company using a model established by Paul Newman, who you may have heard of. You remember him from Butch Cassidy days. But also, you must have seen his salad dressings and lemonades and all the other food products, cookies, and all the things that Newman's own food products have out there and how much they donate of their profits to, and Newman, I think, donates all of it possibly. I think they're a nonprofit altogether. But Give Something Back is a for-profit company that donates a significant amount of their profits to nonprofit institutions to help make education, healthcare, and environmental stewardship a greater reality out there. And we also have with us in our winning business segment today, Hazel Henderson. Yes, that good doctor is making another house call. And you know why it's winning business? Because nobody has to lose. And Hazel is going to bring her insights as a chief economist, futurist, co-executive producer of the Ethical Markets TV series, and the founder of the Calvert Henderson Quality of Life Indicators, which actually goes beyond money to measure the impact of what money means to all of us in our lives. But before we get to Mike and Hazel, you get this week's heaping helping bowl of stew. Yeah, this bowl of stew is a bit of a bear stew. Okay, and for several reasons. Because, one, we're going to take, and it's a bit of a truth serum for that matter as well. Because we're going to take a look at the bare truth of things. And one way to look at it is through the experience of Bear Stearns. And dare I say, what may be a bear market. So here we go. I think we all know by now some of the things that's happened with Bear Stearns in recent days. And I must tell you something. You know, I was a money manager and I've been in the financial community. I had been for about 20 years and I cleared through Bear Stearns. And I know so many people there and a lot of them are really good people. They really are. And I just feel for them because their 401k plan, their ESOP, their stock ownership plan and all the wealth they thought they had is literally a small fraction of what it was. And it's amazing, you know, Jimmy Cain, who was the president of the company, a year ago, he was in the Fortune 400. He was number 380-something. He had over $1 billion of net worth in Bear Stearns stock alone, which he just blew out at $60 million. Now, I'm not going to say that everybody should now get out their violins and start playing a swan song for him and having pity for our $60 million man over there. Not by a long shot. But it just goes to indicate that you think the smartest guys out there, this guy was a Forbes 400 guy worth over $1 billion, and he let a lot of it slip through his hands. So really, the question of the bare truth of the thing is, what is real anymore? What do we really know? Because the truth is, take a look at this one, everything that we think is concrete can go just like that. And obviously one prime example is a World Trade Center building, which was literally concrete until it was rubble. And I'm not sure if you know this, but 2 days before Bear Stearns agreed to sell themselves for $2 a share to J.P. Morgan, CEO Alan Schwartz and another chief executive addressed the entire workforce of Bear Stearns, letting everybody know, you know, there's a lot of rumors swirling out there. You know, the media saying all kinds of things about Bear Stearns and its viability. We want to let you know that we have tangible book value of $80 a share. That was 2 days prior to them agreeing to sell to J.P. Morgan at $2 a share. So, what's the bare truth of it? Were they just lying through their teeth? You know, there's a possibility of that. But if we want to go to all those TV shows we've seen with the law and, you know, all the law shows on TV and all that, where's the motive? Where's the motive for them to lie through their teeth if they knew that this destruction and this rubble was inevitable? Actually, I'd like to make the assumption that they were telling the truth based upon what they thought they knew, that they actually believed that they had a tangible book value of $80, which, as far as I'm concerned, is a very scary premise, because Bear Stearns was one of the premier investment banks in the world. And this guy, Alan Schwartz, and his CFO and the leaders of this company probably knew more about the inner workings of the entire financial system, Bear Stearns, its accounting, and everything else, more so than anybody else on the planet. We should be making that assumption. And if they really thought that it was worth $80 a share on Monday, and on Wednesday it's worth $2, well, maybe the emperor is Bear, okay? And maybe everything that we think this economy stands for can really go just like that. Because if we really look at it, you know, when things get tough, let's print a few $100 billion. Let's bail out some of these mortgage lenders. Let's bail out a Bear Stearns or a J.P. Morgan or something else. I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do. All I'm just saying is it seems like the Federal Reserve gets to print money anytime they choose without asking for anybody's approval. That's just the way it goes. Now, I know that we're no longer on a gold standard, okay? Not that that really makes a difference either, because, you know, everybody thinks that gold, which is hitting new highs, over $1,000 an ounce and everything, is somehow this great storehouse of value, because it was when the Egyptians were learning how to sarcophagize people. But really, when you look at it, just a shiny object, right? You can't eat it. If you're thirsty, you can't drink it. You know, in terms of its actual uses, aside from the trinkets and of jewelry and maybe some gold fillings and a couple of industrial uses, what is gold? The truth is that we're looking at our economy right now and our entire economic system, our entire monetary system is not based on gold. It's based upon some agreement. It's based upon some agreement. And I'm just wondering out loud, when we take a look at the World Trade Center building, where literally it was concrete one day and rubble within a flash. And then we take a look at the Bear Stearns tangible book value of $80 going to $2. And then all of a sudden JP says, okay, fine, you know what, we'll pay you $10. So all of a sudden, instead of paying you X, we'll pay you 5X. It's like, boom, and let's toss these billions of dollars around as if it's kind of like funny money. Maybe because it is. And what may be really, not to scare you, but just to let's have our eyes open here, with the emperor being Bear, literally, as well as figuratively, to have something worth 80 to go to 2, and the smartest minds in the world thinking that to be the case, and then somebody willing to pay 2 and then willing to pay 10, maybe the whole economic system has no clothes, even though we've bought into it so deeply, and we can all, if we had to take a vote around the world, we'd all raise our hands and say, let's keep the game going. You know, let's keep the game going. and we don't know how much more snap this rubber band has. We know for years we've been borrowing money and spending more money than we've been making, financed either by printing money or by Chinese and other countries buying our debt. And how sustainable is it? The reason why we're bringing all this up is that we don't know how much longer this game of musical chairs will continue. We just don't know. Not to live in fear, but rather to keep our eyes wide open. And in doing so, it's time to start judging ourselves by who we are in the inside and assessing ourselves not by our material scorecard, not by how much money we have in the bank, or what kind of toys and cars and everything else we drive around, but how we impact other people's lives. And when we do that, we really tap into the kind of wealth that money can't buy. And with that, we have somebody who's actually practicing this. How about that? It's not just a concept. It's a reality. We have Mike Hannigan, who's a co-founder of Give Something Back. It's a business products company, and to date, they've donated more than half of its profits, and he'll tell us exactly how much. I know it's in the millions. To community groups that support better education, healthcare, culture, the environment. And oh, by the way, they still seem to do very well from a for-profit and financial standpoint. So with that, Mike, thank you so much for being here and welcome to Inside Wealth.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So before we get into the details of Give Something Back, how do you define success?
Boy, that's an interesting question to start off with. I would define it lots of different ways. In business, it's having a profit, making more in revenue than you spend in costs. In your personal life, it's, you know, the health and safety of the kids and the people that you love. You know, there's any number of ways, I think, that you could define happiness and success.
So it does sound like happiness and success go hand in hand for
you.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
So is there a recipe that you have for your own personal success?
You know, I would say no. I'm probably somebody who's kind of stumbled around through life from one thing to the next without a real kind of a plan. But on the whole, I think, you know, I have a pretty good basic set of values. And, you know, I think the most important things to me are the things that will last. I don't think in those terms of, you know, definitions like that.
Okay, because, you know, a lot of people out there have this idea of success being you can't be too rich or too thin or something like that, or they use the money as a scorecard thing. And I think what you're underscoring here, one, is that you don't need to have a plan per se to right. have success, and really what you're talking about is happiness.
Yeah, and I definitely would agree that the traditional kind of definitions of success is how much money you have, what kind of house you live in, what kind of car you drive. I mean, I definitely don't agree with that. But an affirmative definition is a little harder to come
sure.
by for me.
So it's kind of like obscenity. You know it when you see it, or you know it when you feel it.
Yes.
Yes. Got it. Okay. Well, that actually does work for a lot of people too, because it doesn't have to be so rigid. You spent a fair amount of time in corporate America and working for companies with Xerox and Ricoh. What inspired you to create Give Something Back?
Well, I think Give Something Back was, I think, when the two important parts of my life previous to the establishment of Give Something Back in 1991 kind of came together. The opportunity came together to use the set of skills that I had kind of almost accidentally developed from 1978 when I started in Xerox and 1991 when I started Give Something Back, the business skills, the skills that are necessary in order to compete in a very competitive marketplace against companies that are trying to take you out and you're trying to win customers from them. But also during that period of time and before that, I've always been engaged in community activism through my college years and then after hours through my business years. I was one of those people that went out and did community service type things. But it was always kind of a secondary after hours kind of thing. So in 1991, I had an opportunity to start a company on the Newman's Own model that combined both those things, the ability to go into the marketplace and compete, to make a good living, and to do it in a way that was compatible with that community service side of my nature, and to have both things kind of sustain one another.
So what exactly is, for our audience here, for their benefit, what exactly is the structure, like the financial structure or the philosophy of the profit sharing to community or nonprofit activities?
So our goal as a business is to go into the marketplace. We're a business-to-business company. We're like Staples or Office Depot or Corporate Express. We don't have stores. We have trucks and warehouses. So we go in and convince customers to use our products through us for the reasons that are good for their companies, price and service. So we compete in order to make a profit. And we our goal is to make as much profit as we can. In order to do that, we have to have satisfied customers who are achieving their goals, which are their company goals. This is not their money they're spending. This is their company's money. So our goal when we make a profit is to donate that profit to nonprofit organizations that are chosen for us and selected for us by our customers and our employees.
We're going to learn more from Mike Hadigan on how to build a business that does good and well for everybody concerned right here on Inside Wealth. We'll have more Inside Wealth right here on Talk Radio 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. You have a business, a mission, and a message. Inside Wealth can deliver that message to an intelligent, insightful, and mindful audience. Being a sponsor on Inside Wealth, you become an important player in a win-win agreement where nobody has to lose. Invest in your business and your purpose by calling 707-425-2360 or go to InsideWealth.net and sponsor radio that makes a difference. Inside Wealth, the greatest show on earth.
Imagine, you're lying in your bed stranded because you can't walk. Your friends and family go about their day, but you're left behind. You can't move without dragging your lifeless legs across the ground, stumbling every step, struggling to carry the entire weight of your body on two arms. This is reality for more than 100 million children and adults worldwide. They simply can't afford the one thing that will change everything, a wheelchair. We're the Wheelchair Foundation. We deliver hope, mobility, and freedom to impoverished people across the globe. And now you can be part of this great mission. A small gift from you can buy a brand new wheelchair and set a suffering person free. You won't believe how little it takes. Transform a life instantly. To make a donation or to find out how you can help, call the Wheelchair Foundation.
Call toll free. 888-378-3839. 888-378-3839.
Are you looking to help give back to the community but need great flexibility? Tony La Russa's Animal Rescue Foundation, ARF, has a flexible volunteer position tailored just for you. You can share in the triumph of helping an orphan kitten or puppy, as well as receive unconditional love. ARF needs volunteer fosters to provide a little extra time or attention until these animals can be adopted into their forever homes. ARF will provide the food, medication, and support, and you provide the love. Check out ARF.net or call 925-256-1ARF today. Please give puppies and kittens another chance.
Are you in debt? Do you need help reducing your credit card debt? If you're struggling to make monthly payments, falling behind, using one card to pay off another, then get out of debt and get cash back with Debt Relief Solutions. Debt Relief Solutions recommend companies that offer cash back programs just for paying your bills on time each month. They'll put you in touch with experts to help you lower your monthly payments, reduce your interest rates, stop those harassing phone calls, and pay off your credit card debt. Debt Relief Solutions shows you how to get out of debt fast with one simple monthly payment. Save thousands while becoming debt-free and get cash back. Call Debt Relief Solutions today. Get cash back just for paying your bills on time. Certain restrictions apply. Services not available in all states. Now is the time to get out of debt. Call Debt Relief Solutions now and start your savings today.
Call 800-527-7300. That's 800-527-7300.
Here's some more Inside Wealth, the show that truly enriches your life, right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco. We're here with Mike Hadigan, the co-founder of Give Something Back Business Products. It's a B2B company, kind of like a Staples or an Office Max, where they sell office products to other companies. And they have a very interesting model of giving so much of their profitability to community projects, to other nonprofit organizations, and really just being incredible stewards in the community. And, you know, Mike, you shared a little bit about the business model. How much money thus far have you given back to nonprofit organizations and other stakeholders?
Just recently, we came very close to passing the $4 million range. So we just finished our annual donation meeting. Every year we have a donation meeting where we hand out the checks to the nonprofits that were selected that year. And so this year's donations of $434,000 brought the total to almost $4 million, which represents about 78 to 80% of all the profits we've made since we started.
Wow. So do you have a specific percentage formula of how many dollars of profit are allocated for nonprofit activity? Or
No. The formula is the profits are ultimately going to be allocated to the donations. But each year we have to do business planning based on what we forecast our growth to be and what our banking relationships are. So we have to make sure that we have enough liquidity and cash on hand in the bank to make sure that we can achieve our goals without having to go borrow money that we don't want to do for next year. So and it's a moving target. You know, there are years when we've given away twice the annual profits that we made that year. There are years when we've given away 25%. So it's a guess. But over the last 17 years, we've accumulated enough of a net worth to be able to sustain us, I think, through any kind of difficult times that are ahead. And, you know, frankly, we're forecasting some difficult times ahead over the next year.
I was going to ask you what your thoughts are of the economy based upon your business and the conversations that you have and what you see with your business customers.
Well, our business customers are cutting back. I mean, the smart ones are. And there are business customers that will no longer be customers because they will no longer be businesses because they'll go out of business. And hopefully if that happens, they won't go out of business owing us money. But in a difficult – our customers are vulnerable to the swings of the economy. And although we're not the market leader, we're the largest independent office supply company in California, but the market leader, Staples and Office Depot, are more vulnerable to losing customers because they're more directly related to the economy. So we're more likely with an aggressive campaign to pick up customers who are looking for price savings that they would otherwise not be all that, you know, motivated to get in years past. So we think we'll do fine. We grew last year about 8%. We're growing this year maybe 5%. But, you know, the big competitors are shrinking. I mean, they're losing not market share, but they're losing revenues because customers are cutting back. And it's the smart thing to do for a business is to look for ways to get through what look like some rough waters ahead.
Any idea how rough the waters may be, or it's too early to tell?
I think it's too early to tell, but, you know, I'm worried. I mean, you were talking about the Bear Stearns thing. I mean, I think nobody knows. I mean, and some unprecedented government actions have been taken, first time in almost 100 years, really, because they're worried about how difficult this economy is going to be because there's so much unknown. There's so many factors that will affect the profitability of companies that is essentially unknown.
Well, let's go from the unknown to the known for a moment here and get back to give something back and your business model. You mentioned that it's your customers who have direct input into the allocation of where some of your profits go to their charities of choice. Is that correct?
Yes, essentially. I mean, our goal is to take the profits out of the marketplace because, you know, essentially we talk about the difficult economy, but this is a rich, wealthy nation. I mean, it's the richest, most powerful nation in the history of the world. Yet most people are appalled by the fact that, you know, our public education system, our public health systems, I mean, they're literally having difficult times in the midst of this abundance. Now, so for us, the issue is not the availability of wealth or the creation of wealth, but it's the distribution of wealth in a ways that not just me, but, you know, most people, the rich and poor alike, see as really ineffectively dealing with, you know, many of the problems that many of us confront. So our goal is to go into the marketplace where wealth is created and distributed, capture our fair share of that wealth, and then distribute it according to the decisions that are made by the people who live and work in the communities that face the kind of problems that need to be solved. So if we were to poll your listeners, your thousands of listeners, you'd have thousands of different ideas about what the important issues and problems in the communities are. So our goal is to take that wealth and distribute it in a way that's consistent with that diversity of the community so that, you know, you have your issues in terms of what you think is important in your community. I have mine. You know, everybody has theirs. And there's no reason for us to decide one or the other. So we poll our customers. We poll our employees. We send a ballot out to each location that we have a sales office into. And we ask our customers to tell us the organizations, the nonprofit organizations that are doing the best work in your communities, and vote. Each customer gets a ballot. Each customer gets 10 votes. The votes come in. If 10% of the votes go to the Women's Cancer Resource Center, then they get 10% of the profits that are associated with that ballot. So the profits are created in the marketplace that are distributed into the community according to the decisions that are made by the people who should be in a position to judge what's working and what's not working in those communities.
We're here with Mike Hannigan, co-founder of Give Something Back Business Products Company. And it's remarkable how they've given away over $4 million so far in their history to nonprofit activities. Do you find that the your customers or clients, that you gain clients because of your business model and your sense of community involvement and altruism?
I think it's a mixed bag. And any salesperson for Give Something Back, and we probably have 35 or 38 outside salespeople now, find it a very difficult issue to broach with a business customer. Because so put yourself in the shoes of an office manager or a purchasing agent at a major corporation, and for them to go tell their boss, oh, we just switched our office supply contract from Staples to this company called Give Something Back. Well, you know, that Give Something Back doesn't scream out low prices, great service, quality products. It says something else. But what it needs to say to the customer, what the customer needs to hear, is that it's good for our business. It contributes to our business's bottom line. The other stuff, the Give Something Back aspect, has got to be seen as not a trade-off. So we're not asking customers to make any sacrifices at all. And that's where the idea came from. And I was a consumer of Newman's Own spaghetti sauce. You know, back in 1990, I was a single guy, and, you know, single guys eat spaghetti sauce for dinner most of the time.
Hopefully with spaghetti.
Yeah.
On a good
with
day.
With spaghetti. So, and, you know, and you're shopping around, and there's Newman's Own up there, and it costs the same as the other brands. It's got kind of a healthy feel to it. And so as a consumer, it's a perfectly valid choice. Plus, if you're interested in the fact that the profits are donated to charities rather than going to the Franco-American stockholder, that's an additional competitive advantage. So that model, good for the customer, good for the community, good for the company, is the model that makes sense in our business place. As long as we can compete, then we can create wealth and then have that wealth go out into the community. So, but we have to cross that threshold with the business customer, because remember, it's not their money they're spending. They're responsible for making a good financial decision for their companies. If we can't provide them that good financial decision, then we don't deserve their business. But if we do, then we should make a profit. And, you know, frankly, every company gives its profits away, ultimately. I mean, you know, Staples doesn't put its profits under a mattress somewhere. Eventually, that profit is going to be given away to the owners of the company, either through dividends or appreciation of stock value. So the question is, who are the beneficiaries of this success? For us, we've just substituted the principal stakeholder of investors and stockholders with the principal stakeholder of the community served by nonprofit organizations, chosen by the people who live and work in those communities. And it's a model that really does work in the marketplace.
And the point you're underscoring here is that there is still plenty of retained earnings, if you want to call it that, or funding internal to the company, so you can continue to grow.
Sure. And, you know, we're not giving the payroll away. We're giving the profit away. So our employees, our mortgage payment, all the cost factors that we need to be aware of in our business are the same cost factors that our competitors need to be aware of, and those cost factors are determined by the market. So we can't pay our workers more, we can't pay our workers less. Otherwise, our workers will either go away or we'll be overpaying them, and then the cost differential will be exploited by our competitors by having lower prices. So the marketplace really puts us in a fairly narrow band in terms of what we can offer and how we operate as a business. If we can do that, and my business partner and I, Sean Marks, we came out of a business environment, so we understood what it took to compete in a very competitive copy machine marketplace, which is a very similar marketplace.
So how do you compete effectively when you're dancing with giants here?
Well, we have a virtually stockless business model. Like most of the high-growth office supply companies in America, we've moved more to a logistical model that allows us to deliver merchandise anywhere in the country next day, for less than it costs if we warehouse the merchandise ourselves. So we probably pay a point or two more for the merchandise, but we save a point or two less on the distribution and the overhead that we have in comparison to companies like Staples, Office Depot, Office Max. So, but the proof is in the pudding. I mean, many of our contracts are blind contracts. We've been the paper vendors for the city and county of San Francisco for 9 years. And all those contracts are won on closed bids. So how we achieve that cost parity with the multinational corporations, you know, it's a complicated business question. But the fact of the matter is observable just in the way we've grown over the past 17 years.
Is a fair amount of your business also with municipalities or other institutions that would be more readily interested in the give something back business model? Or it's just, once again, even for them, it's all, you know, the numbers first.
It's got to be numbers first. I mean, if, you know, if the city and county were spending more money on its pens and paper, they'd be have less to spend on health care and, you know, police. So, you know, it's the responsibility of the buyer to make a good decision for the entity they work for. So, and we understand that. And if, and frankly, this business model would not survive, would not be sustainable if we didn't operate in that room. Somebody's making money selling this stuff. All we've done is we've just changed the beneficiary. We haven't changed how we make the profit. There are some things we do differently because we have a stakeholder that is a community stakeholder. So, for example, we have a large solar array that produces the electricity we use as a business on our roof, and all of our employees have their health care paid for. I think we're even Staples cut back their employees' health care last year, even though they made $1.6 billion. Now, you know, they didn't do it because, you know, they hate their employees. They did it because their goal, as most public corporations' goal, is to enhance shareholder value. So, but so we probably overpay in terms of the marketplace for certain things, but as long as we're profitable, we would consider those expenses more kind of human rights that would be very, very difficult for us to change our strategy along those lines. So, so when you consider the community and your employees and the environment legitimate stakeholders in the way you run your business, some of the decisions are different, but most of the fundamental business decisions are still the same.
So why don't you give us an example of some of the organizations and groups that you have donated to based upon popular vote here over the in recent history here?
Well, historically, food banks are always big vote getters because they serve the truly needy. Public health organizations have been getting a lot of votes in the last few years. Domestic violence organizations receive a lot of votes. Animal organizations, animal rights organizations get an unbelievable number of votes. Less so now than maybe 5 years ago when there was less of an urgency to the quality of life of, you know, human beings. But, you know, for several years, the SPCA was the top vote-getting organization in our balloting process, reflecting, you know, the popular, you know, view that animals needed, you know, assistance and help. So, you know, you could – there are 1.2 billion nonprofit organizations, registered nonprofit organizations in the United States of America. In the Bay Area, within 100 miles of us right here, there's 25,000 of them. So how do you choose? I mean, they're doing everything from, you know, taking blind skiers up to the mountains for recreational. There's any number of themes that – people organize nonprofits organizations. So it's impossible for us in running a business to be in any reasonable position to judge who's doing work better than others. So our goal is to put it out there to the people who should be in a position to know, who validate the success of these organizations by their votes.
Well, I've got one final question for you, Mike, and our time together has been going all too quickly. What is your vision for what our world could possibly be?
Well, you know, I'm extremely optimistic. 17 years ago when we started this company, we were kind of a fringe company. People really didn't kind of get the idea that a company could be organized in a competitive in marketplace and still have a central, socially responsible core organizing principle. But it's kind of becoming mainstream now. There are national organizations that have hundreds and hundreds of companies like ours that are out there organized in the marketplace on behalf of stakeholders other than investors and stockholders for the environment. There is even there's even a foundation now. The Google Foundation is the first for-profit foundation. I mean, that's a foundation who's going to invest in its money in companies like ours who are out there competing in the marketplace on behalf of some socially responsible goal. So you can't go to a graduate program in business and not be inundated with students saying, don't just teach me marketing and finance. Teach me something about corporate social responsibility. So there is a whole movement now over the past 17 years that is really gaining steam to be able to use business as a tool to accomplish goals that most citizens of the United States would recognize as being legitimate, valid goals.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you so much for being a shining example and a pioneer to show how the rubber can hit the road. And there's plenty of rubber for everybody.
Thanks a lot. It's a pleasure being here.
We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW, 910 AM, San Francisco.
goodwill, ownership, trust, appreciation. They all work in the financial world. And they are all keys to security and wealth beyond measure. And it's all in our book, Inner Security and Infinite Wealth, subtitled Merging Self-Worth and Net Worth. Hey there, it's me, Stu Zimmerman. Come to our website at insidewealth.net. That's insidewealth.net and order your copy today. That's insidewealth.net. We're blowing the doors wide open on Inside Wealth right here on Talk 910 AM, KNEW, San Francisco.
And now it's time for our winning business segment, and it's winning business because nobody has to lose. And with us today is Dr. Hazel Henderson. She's the author of Ethical Markets, Growing the Green Economy, co-produced and founded the TV series of the same name, Ethical Markets, futurist, economist, brilliant woman, really plugged in. Hazel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure, as always, Stu. So I want to talk about another way that we can help end the recession and grow the new green economy. And, of course, a lot of people have been talking about reforming Wall Street. But I have some additional ideas, and they're kind of for a little bit for insiders, but everybody ought to know about it. And when you go and turn on those TV shows, you know, you always have the commentators are talking about these various asset classes, you know, and how you should allocate your securities between, say, energy and retail and defense, you know, and health and transportation. You know what I'm talking about, industrials, et cetera. And the problem with that is that basically all of those are obsolete, you might say fossilized, asset allocation categories. And what we really need now is a new category called the sustainability sector, where it would make all of these rapidly growing green companies more visible, whether they're in renewable energy or clean fuels or organic foods or whatever. You know, because what happens now, these are all small companies, and so therefore, there's a lot of asset managers of these big pension funds and whatever are unable to invest in these little companies anyway. But if they were all put together in a sustainability sector, it would make them a lot more visible, and it would make it a lot easier for people to buy an index like that, give these companies much more visibility, and help them get the investment and the capital that they need to grow faster. So what do you think?
I love the idea. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I agree with you completely that a number of the individual companies may be a little too illiquid. Or too small for some large institutions to invest in.
Yeah.
But that also begs the next question of, even when you pool them, what in aggregate do you think would be the valuation of that basket? And would, if you were to get the attention of, let's say, a CalPERS, you know, the state retirement system here, or some of the other major foundations and institutions and pension plans to get involved in this sector, you know, how much room is there for them to play in it? How big do you think this index would be?
Well, it would be huge, really, because if you look now, there are about six different clean tech indexes. Many of them we have on our website, and a lot of those are, you know, up in the $1 billion total valuation, because these green sectors, particularly wind energy and solar, are growing worldwide. I mean, the only thing, for example, that's holding back wind power companies right now is the backlog of orders to make those turbine blades. I mean, we're in these kind of situations. Or you've got, in the solar energy industry, you've got a shortage of silicon. And this is creating whole new industry in the state of Michigan. And Michigan is now talking about it is going to be in the solar age rather than the automobile industry because they are building factories to produce the silicon. So there's a lot of these kind of supply bottlenecks at the moment, but it all attests to the fact how quickly all of these sectors are growing. And then you add to that the $2.3 trillion in assets, which is invested in socially responsible mutual funds. And so actually, I mean, I haven't really done a full kind of analysis of how much there would be in this basket, but it really would be huge. And even if a lot of those asset managers, like at CalPERS, felt, okay, you know, we can't, because of our rules, invest in some of these companies, most of them do have a venture capital pocket where they can begin investing in some of the startups. And, of course, that's where the real payoff comes. I mean, for example, I'm a compulsive startup investor. And I have a great deal of fun because, you know, I've been in this sector for so long that I feel fairly confident about going into some of these companies. And so really, you know, this is how we need to grow this economy much faster, because this is where the new jobs are going to come from. This is where the new Googles and the new Microsofts are all lurking, waiting to be discovered.
And are these funds being created right now, to your knowledge, on the VC side? Yeah, because I know there's a lot of money from some a lot of the top-tier VCs are looking at clean tech and have raised a lot of money for it.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, like Kleiner Perkins, the big one there, and Sand Hill Road in Palo Alto, they are rushing into this whole green area, you know, and they're kind of leading the pack. But there are much further, you know, more pioneering firms like CleanTech, the CleanTech group that came out of Canada, and people can find that CleanTech group and what they're recommending on our website. And then there's a whole lot of new market letters now, like green chip stocks, like New Energy News, green buildings, greener IT. And so at last, all of this is becoming visible. And we really had to wait until we used the internet for this, because the old mainstream financial TV shows still have this fossilized asset allocation approach,
right?
Because after all, they are funded by all of the fossil fuel age companies.
Well, it's time to if we don't change, we'll become fossils ourselves. I think that's the bottom line here.
Sure is.
Hazel, I want to thank you again for showing up so beautifully. Thank you for your
wisdom. Thank you so much, Stuart. All the best now.
Likewise. Bye bye. So here we are. You know, this is another indication of where rubber can hit the road, where Hazel is talking so clearly about how we can begin to create structures to shift our investments on a macro scale with some of these major public institutions and the largest institutional investors to invest in ways that can make our country more sustainable, more independent from foreign oil, and, you know, make our air cleaner and employ more people and keep our money more domestically circulating. All of that is fantastic on the macro sense. What can you do on the micro sense? Well, one, you could certainly invest in some of these companies. You can go to Hazel's site. She's got great information there at ethicalmarkets.com, or just come to our website at insidewealth.net. That's insidewealth.net. And we always have a link to Hazel. But there's something else you can do by coming to our website, because we have this thing called the Preferral Network, where even on the micro scale, we have relationships with companies who conduct themselves in ways that are truly values-based. And actually, just like Mike Hannigan's company, he's not one of them, but he would certainly qualify. In fact, I'll talk to him about qualifying even more in another conversation with Give Something Back. But these are companies like Hutch Ashew and Pillar Financial, or John Menke and Menke and Associates, where they have their principles of inside wealth, their dedication to excellence, full communication and transparency, and doing their absolute best to maintain a relationship over time. So it's not just about maximizing the transaction and on to the next one, which is the way so many other businesses, those fossilized businesses, if you want to call it that in Hazel's lexicon, how they operate. So come to our website at insidewealth.net and find out and get to meet some of the people who actually have the rubber hit the road. It's called our referral network because we prefer it. We prefer them and we're referring them. So there you go. You know, as we wind up this show today of Inside Wealth, there's a theme here because these times, they are a-changing, you know, as another Zimmerman would have said. You know, these times, they are a-changing. And the old ways of doing business are not necessarily sustainable. The way of maximizing shareholder value exclusively and not focusing on the other stakeholders, for example. And this is not unique to Mike Hannigan over at Give Something Back. Okay, there are a number of other business models, but of course, Give Something Back has now donated over $4 million to nonprofit companies, which they feel, and a lot of them are community-based, so that's one of the stakeholders. The community is one of the stakeholders. Their employees, where they make sure to give them the health benefits. It may cost a little bit, but you know what? It also makes for a vibrant workforce. It makes for a sustainable company that is dedicated and motivated to doing their best. And frequently, it's that attitude that builds the relationship through which money flows. And it's not just about, as Mike pointed out, making $1.6 billion in profits as they're cutting employees' health care benefits. You know, squeezing a little more blood out of the stone because they're viewing their investors as more important stakeholders than their employees. When in fact, there needs to be a balance. And that's what Mike brings to the table. And he's certainly one great example of doing good and doing well and not having to personally maximize his own wallet for the sake of being not just a great corporate citizen, but being a global citizen and doing his best to improve the quality of life around the planet and even in the community. Let's just take it more locally, by helping to improve the lives of people who are less fortunate in one way or another. And you know, as we come full circle here and we take a look from the bowl of stew and Bear Stearns and the bear market and the bear truth, if we really take a look at what's underlying all of this, where we have been so conditioned to focus our quality of life based on our quantities in life, we've been so conditioned to take a look at our bank account and the car we drive and the bling we have and measure ourselves versus everybody else. That's one of the fossilized ways that is going away.